And welcome to the program, Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC. And, was in San Francisco here a few days ago. What was it? Wednesday. And kind of fun. Did everybody get to see the now famous, infamous game? Last game Kobe played, LA Lakers, Wednesday night. Everybody's nodding. Yes. Good, good, good. 60 points. I think Kobe at the end says, you know, my whole career, everybody's telling me to pass the ball. And here I am playing and everybody's giving me the ball. So really exciting. But so I started my day. Well, even before that, let me get back to kind of the beginning here. So I got a couple of tickets sometime earlier in the week. Somebody pinged me and said, hey, I've got some tickets, and would you like to go to the game? And that's the kind of friend you want to have, let me tell you. So I look at my schedule, and I've got a deposition in San Francisco that day. And I just know I'm not going to make it back in time. And even if I did, the last thing I want to do is get in the car and drive up to L.A., to the Staples Center. I don't want to do it. So I know my son wants to, he's doing really well. Thanks for asking. He's doing great in basketball. Had a great game the weekend before. So I know he wants to see this. So I tell Sherry, my wife, and I say, look, please take Daniel to the game. Like, you guys go and have a great time. And she is stoked. I mean, she's stoked because, you know, she's a Lakers fan and loves Kobe and all that good stuff. So she and Daniel get ready. They're going to go to the game, and I'm going to stay home. So I go up to San Francisco, and I'm in this deposition, and I'm going to sidetrack here. I don't know if you've ever been in a deposition. They're not really, you don't really get to see them on TV very often. So I'm going to give you a little sneak peek into, Here's how they work. So when you file a lawsuit against somebody, or heaven forbid, somebody file a lawsuit against you, the case doesn't just go to court right away. It's a big misnomer. You know, you don't file your lawsuit and then, you know, go before a judge and a jury and start talking. In civil cases, which is, you know, any kind of case where you're suing for money or that kind of thing, right? Civil cases, you're talking about The first stage in that case is going to be something called discovery, okay? And all that means is each side in the lawsuit has an opportunity to ask questions and to discover documents from the other side. So let's say you're talking about a car accident. You're basically, the other side is going to get information that you have, and then you are going to get information that they have. And one of the things that you do, one of the components or parts of discovery, is a deposition. And what it is you can make the other party, whoever it is, it could be a witness, but it of course can also be the defendant, or it can be, you know, it can be the plaintiff. The other side can make him show up at a particular place in a particular time and answer questions from the other attorney under oath. And that's the thing. Like, you lie, you go to jail. Like, perjury, bad thing. So, yeah, there's a court reporter there. You get, you know, and that's also a fascinating thing. You know, when they type really fast, you see that, crazy. So everything is put on a transcript, and then there it is. It's part of the court record. You get the best information from these depos because you've got the person, you finally have the human being behind the problem, and you've got him or her sitting in that chair, and you get to ask him all sorts of questions and really, you know, really get what you need out of them. And the funny thing is, I'm always surprised when I'm a plaintiff's lawyer, so my opponents are defense attorneys, and I'm always perplexed when defense attorneys will sit my client down and immediately take a nasty tack with them. Because here's a practice tip. The best way you're going to get somebody to give you the information that you want is if you're just nice to them. That's it. You just, yeah, you sit them down and you start it off nice and easy and you talk to them. You just talk to them, and pretty soon you make them nice and comfortable, and then you slip in. Yeah, you slip in that one important question, and you've walked away a winner. Well, instead, and this is what happened in this particular depot, this, you know, dragon lady defense attorney decides she's just going to murder my client, you know, and just, it really was like that. Robbie's shaking his head. He doesn't believe it. But, and so I had to get a little bit aggressive, and it was fun. I think at one point, you know, the defendant showed up to the deposition, and you can do that. So if any party to a lawsuit can go to a deposition, but it's not open to anyone that wants to attend. So the defendant showed up with his, and he's elderly, but he, you know, this is a guy who shouldn't be driving. He's in his 90s. He doesn't see very well, and he pulls out in front of my client, and my client gets hit by his car and goes, he's on a motorcycle, goes flying over the, you know, it crazy, horrible, horrible accident. And so what happened here, so the defendant, the old guy sitting in the deposition, he's allowed to be there, but he's brought his sister-in-law. So at one point, I kind of waited with it a little bit, and then I got the defense attorney starting to really get into some of the questions that are tough, that are kind of the meat questions. And I knew now's my time to strike, little jiu-jitsu move. So I cut her off mid-sentence, and I said, excuse me, who are you? Pointing to the gal I know shouldn't be there. And, well, I'm his daughter-in-law. I'm just here to help him with his meds. I'm like, I'm sorry, you're not a party to the deposition. I'm going to have to ask you to leave. And so there it is. It got interrupted. So gets interrupted, and the gal has to stand up and leave. And it was totally threw the defense attorney off the trail, off her, you know, her mental, wherever she was going. And there are some other things. So anyway, long story short, this thing should have taken us 4 hours. And instead, it was an all-day thing. And at one point, I'm looking over at my associate that's there with me, and she is flustered. And I'm thinking, well, I'm doing the depo. Why are you flustered? So during a break, I say to her, what's going on? And she says, oh, I'm just so mad at myself that I didn't move this depo. I was supposed to be at the Kobe game tonight. Now, we're talking, it is 2 p.m. It is 2 p.m. in San Francisco. And don't worry. So this story, I don't want to, spoiler alert, this story has a happy ending. But I'll tell you how it happened. So I've got to be at this game. My parents spent all this money. My brother, you know, flew from the East Coast, and it was a family thing. And, oh, I felt so bad for her. And in the back of my head, I'm thinking, well, Sherry and Daniel, they're going to have fun there. I don't know if you're going to make it. So the depo goes until 5 p.m. From 10:30 to 5 with the half hour break for lunch. It was terrible. And so the one advantage here is Sam Nation won. We left that depo at 5 p.m. That's downtown San Francisco. And we made a little pit stop for her. This is how we take care of people. Yeah, we made a stop at Santa Monica Airport. It took us an hour and a half to get there from the deposition. So follow me on this, Robbie. It's crazy. So yeah, we land there at 6:30. She gets an Uber, and she gets to the game by 7:15. Can you believe it? And so here I am. I'm going, and then I have to fly from, you know, not that I'm complaining, but we fly from Santa Monica to Orange County. Have you ever done that flight, Rob? Ever? It's, so there's all this noise abatement in Santa Monica. And they everybody in Santa Monica hates this airport, by the way, right? If you live on the west side, you hate Santa Monica Airport. So they make you take off basically straight up and then almost turn off engines as you go over where all the rich people live, because you're not allowed to make any noise there. So you turn off the engines, and it almost felt like you're going weightless for a minute or two. And then off and away to Orange County. At any rate, I get home, it's 8:30, I'm getting into bed, and I just think to myself, look at all the people I got to that game today. I got my wife there, I got Daniel there. Yeah, and even our associate made it in the nick of time. So we make dreams come true. We make dreams come true. It all worked out. I didn't even watch it. I was so exhausted from that day, I didn't even watch it. But I hear the traffic coming out of there was insane. You guys know I'm not a big sporting events person, but I'll tell you, the reason for it is I hate crowds. I'm just not a crowd person. I don't enjoy any kind of crowds. And the best thing about a sporting event, in my opinion, is that people tend to leave at different times. But the worst sporting events to go to are the ones where everyone wants to stay to the end. And that's what this was. Everybody waited for Kobe to talk, to give a speech. And so all 1 billion people that showed up there were all hanging on every word and then got released into the parking lot all at the same time. So if you were there and you made it out alive, congratulations. All right. I promise there's stuff to talk about. We've so much. So I'm going to explain this whole Trump and Colorado thing to you. And it's not what you've been hearing. I promise you that. It's not what you've been hearing. Back after this, Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KBC. All right, Sam Nation, Sam Rojofsky here. Okay, let me talk to you for a minute here about this whole Colorado election deal that everybody's been talking about this week, and I'm going to break it down for you real simply. This is not really a delegate math conversation. Okay, so don't worry, I'm not going to be overwhelming you with numbers. The big news story this week is Colorado and how they chose these delegates, because there was no real election, and there wasn't even a caucus. That's exactly right. These rules were all set up back in August. And every state. You see, every state has a political party. So you have a national committee. Let's say like the Democrats. There's a Democratic National Committee, and there's a Republican National Committee on the Republican side. And then each state has its own state committee. Okay, state Republican Party, state Democratic Party, and there will be a state chairman. And there are also local chairmen. You know like LA County, Orange County, different areas will have local leadership. And these state organizations determine how their primary elections or primary caucuses are run. And so what happened here was, sometime in August, the Republican Party in Colorado decided that they weren't going to have an actual primary. They were going to have a state convention of sorts. And the thing about it was they set it up to be someplace really far away. So it wasn't centrally located. You know, it's a great effort when you have an election, you try to have local polling places, make it easy for people to vote. This was exactly the opposite of it. There was a Byzantine way of becoming selected as a delegate to this convention. And this convention was set up in a way to really only encourage the most diehard of party functionaries to attend. In other words, you have a real job, right? You go to work every day. You're not the guy, and certainly I'm not the guy, who's going to go to this convention. It wasn't set up for people like you and me. It was set up for hacks, for party loyalists and people that are in the know. inside the Beltway types. Now, the issue here isn't so much that the rules are the rules, because here's the narrative that I've been hearing. The narrative I've been hearing is the rules were the rules, Trump lost, Cruz won, and any boo-hoo from Donald Trump is just sour grapes. And that's the narrative that I think has been dominating the news cycle since Saturday. And I was talking to producer Robbie about this, and he told me he had some great insight on this, where he was talking to some friends of his who are not necessarily political. So they might be a little bit like you, where they, you know, they're not following every news cycle, every news story. They're not reading all the details, but they're reasonably in the know. And that was exactly their take. Their take was that Trump was whining. Now, the reality is Trump knew about these rules since August. Or, as we lawyers say, had known or should have known about these rules since August. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. The rules were out there. They were public. They may have been conceived of in a back smoke-filled room somewhere in Boulder. That's wrong kind of smoke. But anyway, it might have been conceived somewhere in a back room by the Colorado Republicans. But once these rules were put into place, they were published. They were openly known to the candidates who put themselves up for election in the state primaries. So on that level, Trump was on notice. Team Trump knew that this was the setup. And they also, well, they also should have known that they were in for a setup. Okay? Because the real backstory here is that the chairman of the Republican committee of Colorado is really not a big fan of the Donald. Way back when, he has been known to be absolutely 100% anti-Trump. Okay. And yeah, so here, well, how do I know that? Easy. Back in August 11th, which would be about the time that these rules were promulgated, Colorado Republican Party Chair Steve House, that is his name, no relation to Dr. House, was musing about the state of the Republican race, which at this point had just barely begun. We're talking back to August, middle of August. Do I think he's going to be the nominee? Mr. House opined. Absolutely not. Do you know who he's taking votes away from? Ted Cruz. Right. Ted Cruz. Which is so hard to believe. Not neutral. Not in the least. In fact, it's pretty clear this Republican Party chairman in Colorado has a horse in the game. And that horse's name is Ted. So here's another quote. I think what happens to Donald Trump, with all due respect to a man who has made billions of dollars and had companies go bankrupt and recovered, is he's going to get bored. He's going to get bored. Now, what else does he say here? He's going to get tired of the continuous questioneering. Is that even a word? Questioneering and badgering. Well, first of all, Steve, you're an idiot, because your prediction here failed pretty miserably. The other thing is, you should have, I think, if you're managing a party apparatus that is going to be managing in turn the state's primary process, you should at least pretend to be neutral. Yes, you ought to favor. Yeah, you can have a. Of course, you can't just. You're not going to. Of course, everybody has a preferred candidate. It's true, and especially in a hotly contested race like this one, there's some sore feelings out there, and people love their guy. The Ted Cruz supporters, you know, they're not big fans of Trump. Trump supporters are just really big fans of Trump and no one else. Yes, these primaries are heated, and not just on the Republican side. In fact, you could say a lot of these kind of same shenanigans are going on between Hillary and Bernie, where the party seems to have a favorite there. All right. So we got this guy, and this is on tape. They, not just tape, this is on video. So, don't let me forget about the Fiorina quote. This is the same guy, by the way. I'm really looking forward to having Donald Trump and Carly Fiorina on the same stage because I think she will make him look bad. I really, really do. Okay. Yeah, that didn't happen either, right? What's the takeaway here? Yeah, Trump should have known it was a setup, of course. But the real issue here is that whatever the rules are, it has a distinctly undemocratic flavor to it, does it not? Because here, a fairly populous state that would have maybe voted for Cruz, I don't know, folks, they're pretty conservative, but they may have voted for Trump as well, or they're denying a real election, denying the people their vote is not a good thing for the party. And the reason for that is the party needs to eventually give legitimacy to its nominee. And whomever that nominee is, it's all men at this point on the Republican side remaining in the race, he is going to have to be able to stand up and have the credibility as a person who got voted in by the people. If he was selected in by the party, it's a house of cards. So what the Republican Party is sort of, and the Democrats are doing the same thing too. I don't want to forget about that. But what the Republican Party risks here is selecting out with all these, you know, little rules and little tweaks and changes, but all legitimate, right? They're all legitimate. But if they take a candidate like Cruz, for example, who has, let's say, going into the convention, 700 delegates, and then they take a candidate like Trump, who going into the convention has, let's say, 1,200 delegates, but 37 shy of that magic number, and Cruz walks out of that convention with the nomination, because he has worked a good ground game, because he has navigated more deftly these rules, these behind the scenes machinations. We're dealing with an electorate. You know this. We're dealing with voters out there who are literally allergic to the government, to the inside dealings of government. On the right, on the left, they're just both done with it. And so this is going to be a problem. This is going to be a problem. Uh-huh. Well, that's a good question, isn't it? It's a good question. Will they vote? Yeah, they will. But this is the kind of thing, well, they might stay out of it, but this is the kind of thing that possibly leads to an interesting Armageddon scenario, politically speaking. And so the question will be, is there a viable third party run? Is there a viable third party run? Because that's what people are asking. I'm going to be back after this. Quick timeout. Stay tuned. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. All right, we're back. So imagine if you are leaving the last Kobe game. You're leaving the parking lot, and it's a zoo. Everybody's leaving at the same time, and you're just trying to get home, and you cut someone off. But regrettably, the person you cut off is Jack Nicholson. You might remember what happens to people when they cut off Jack Nicholson. No? No. Oh, this is a little LA history for you. Yeah, I think it was 1994. Jack Nicholson got a little angry with some guy for cutting him off. So he proceeds to get out of his car and begins whacking the other dude's car with a golf club. And he had some little problems with the law. I think it all went away. But no, yeah, no, was he in Joker makeup? That would have been good. So imagine that happens to you. All you wanted to see was a little basketball, some hoops. And next thing you know, you got Jack Nicholson wailing away on your car. I know what you do. There's only one thing to do, and that is you got to call Sweet James. Because if there's anyone that can talk some sense into Jack Nicholson, it's Sweet James. Well, James, well, Robbie, you're, yeah, well, isn't that what you would do? You would. And the reason is because you want an attorney that's not just going to fight for you, but you know he can walk into a room and take whatever opponent and any problem you have and turn it around in your favor. That's really powerful. So James is one of these guys. I've known him a long time. I can tell you this. He's one of these guys who really has a powerful way of connecting, and not just with people that are his friends, but people that his opponents. And I think that's why he's such a feared and respected attorney. It's a rare find. And so if you've been in a car accident, okay, and you're there it is. You're dealing with the aftermath of all that stuff. And the insurance company's calling you. And what do they want to do? They want to throw peanuts your way, don't they? They just want to throw away, here, have $100. Here's $200. Here's $500. Go away, please. And what do so don't be a dolt. Don't take the money. Make the call. 1-800-881-2021. Call Sweet James right away. Make that your first call. And the reason is because if you go to the insurance company and you go to them palms up and you say, I just want to do the right thing. I deserve a fairer compensation and I'm going to cooperate with you fully. All they're going to do is, yeah, that's right. You know what I'm going to say. That's right. You are going to get screwed. Don't be that guy. Okay? Don't be that guy. Make sure that you've got the kind of help to get through all of this. And I'll tell you, in fact, let me talk about my deposition for a minute that I was in San Francisco. You know, there's this kid who has a terrible injury from a motorcycle accident. Terrible injury. And what does the insurance company want to talk about? They want to talk about his Instagram. You believe that? Because that's the first thing they're going to do. The first thing that they do is they start digging up dirt on you. They're not interested in finding out about your medical records. They're not interested in finding out what's wrong with you, how hurt you are. No, their investigators are looking you up to see, oh, look, there you are. You're walking. You can't be in pain. Look at that picture. It's absurd. So don't, please, if you still have faith that the insurance companies, any of them, are going to stand by you and take care of you, even if it's your own insurance, you're crazy. It's not how the world works. They're very good at collecting premiums from you. They're good at making advertisements. They're really good. They got the cute little gecko. But when it comes time to submitting a claim and looking, expecting maybe only just a fair result, right? Forget about it. It's not going to help. It's not going to happen without a little bit of help. So if any of that happens, listen, it's the number one call, Sweet James, 1-800-881-2021. I'll start that over again. 1-800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021. Or visit www.sweetjames.com. So, well, yeah, so... Well, Robbie says it's kind of, insurance companies are kind of like the government. You know, trust us, send us your tax dollars and we'll take care of the rest. Did you see this over here? Did you see this? Is that why you're, well, it's kind of the same thing, right? You have to pay, if you don't send in your premiums, what happens? Your insurance gets cut off, right? You're the bad guy. If you don't pay your taxes, not good. By the way, tax day was not on Friday, as many of you had expected. It's this Monday. So if you haven't done your taxes yet and thought you were late, you've got another day. So get them done. But yeah, so as you're doing your taxes, this I think is what producer Robbie's getting at. Okay, we love to talk about government waste because, in my opinion, the government is run like no business could ever possibly be run. In fact, if you ever wanted to start an ultimate money losing business, you could take the playbook of the federal government and follow it to a T. Well, here are just some of the crazy things that your hard-earned tax dollars, if you're sending a check to the government on Monday, this is some of the stuff that you are going to help support. Yes, there is actually a grant now out there, $283,000 for the Department of Defense, aka the military, to do bird watching. Apparently, there's some small gray bird known as the California gnatcatcher. That's what we need to send to Sacramento, right, Robbie? Clean it up there. The gnatcatcher. And it's got an enemy. It's some bird named Cowbird. And they are pretty aggressive. They'll hijack the gnatcatcher's nest and then lay eggs, heaven forbid. And then the gnat catchers don't quite realize that they're raising this other bird's egg. And I think that's pretty brilliant. You know, well, this is just in time for Father's Day, is it not? So this $283,000 for this. There's another grant for almost $49,000 to write about Russian smokers. This is one of my favorites. It keeps in with the whole bird theme. $407,000 to look at a chicken and egg problem. And they're apparently here, they're really concerned about media coverage and polarization. Does media coverage cause polarization? Or is polarization causing the media coverage to be so, well, vitriolic? I don't know. $407,000 just to figure that out. And, yeah, well, are you talking about the one? Oh, well, so now let's put the numbers up a little bit. There's $3.1 billion spent on vacation for federal employees who are on administrative leave. Administrative leave is fancy talk for you really shouldn't be here, but we can't technically fire you right now. Okay? And that's all these collective bargaining agreements because you've got everybody in some union or other and they're protected up to the hilt. The way you and I couldn't even dream of having this kind of security. These guys who work for us go to work, screw up, do things. You know, what does it take to get a state employee fired? I can answer that question, Robbie. He's got his hands up in the air. My dad was a librarian at UCI. And growing up, he had this crazy coworker. Have I ever told you this story? I can't name any names, but he had this crazy coworker in the 80s who was quite literally mentally insane. I mean, mental. And he would do terrible, he would always play practical jokes. And the thing that, I think he at one point glued all the doors, all the locks shut, everybody's desk he locked shut. And he got away with everything. You cannot get fired for anything at a UC school. A microaggression, now that forget about it. If you say something like, anyone in America can get ahead, you can get, yeah, well, you can get kicked out of school as a student for that. But yeah, go ahead and terrorize your workplace. And as long as you're a left-wing nut, you're going to keep your job. I promise you that. So what else? Oh, he finally got fired. Point of the story. He finally gets fired when he calls in a bomb threat. So that is where UC Irvine draws the line. Okay? Bomb threat. Well, I'll save it for another day. I got great UC Irvine stories. I got great UC Irvine stories. So, yeah, $3.1 billion of your tax dollars spent on employees that should just get fired. Does this make you angry? Because you know what? I'm mad as hell. I am mad as hell. All right. We got to talk about Hillary. We got to talk about Hillary and Bernie. We do. And Coachella. Do you even know what Coachella is? I'm so late to the game on this. I'm so late. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Okay, so just a brief little note here. Brief little note back to the first segment when we were talking about the Republicans and this crazy convention nonsense. This is the kind of thing I was talking about. See, yeah, there's this tweet from Rance Priebus, a.k.a. Prince Rebus, Republican National Committee Chairman. And Prince Rebus says, well, I'll read it to you. Nomination process known for a year plus beyond. Sounds like a Buzz Lightyear quote. Okay, it's the responsibility of the campaigns to understand it. Complaints now? Give us all a break. Okay. Not since Marie Antoinette saying let them eat cake has there been a more tone-deaf response to the political climate of the day. Because here is the news flash to Republicans and to Democrats. Nobody gives a rat's rear end about your rules. We care about fair play. It's got to pass the smell test. If it doesn't pass the smell test, well, you're toast. It's a voluntary organization. There isn't anything in the Constitution that says thou shalt have two parties. They don't. Nothing in there about it. Instead, we've had this thing develop, and it's actually a fairly delicate ecosystem where you have two parties, and they have to consolidate the two halves of America into a consensus candidate. That's why everybody says, I don't like him, but I'm going to vote for him. That's code for, you know what? He's not my guy. He's not my perfect candidate, but he's better than the other person. And that's not a bad thing. I talk about it all the time. I talk about how it's, you know, you could be Europe. You could have 18 political parties and they could all be climbing over each other to figure stuff out. That's not good either. That's not good either. It's not good either, because what you want is you want the consensus candidate. You want the consensus candidate, and that's what this system is. But it's not a consensus candidate when you don't give people the vote. When you decide, like they did in Colorado, that we're going to hand select who gets all the delegates of the state. And we're going to hand select it with rules that we created in a committee that is run by people who plainly favor the candidate that, gasp, surprise, won that election. That is cheap. And even some very well-respected, well-followed radio hosts that I won't name, who I respect, can't wrap their minds around this. I think they're two on the inside. And this is not the election to have it done. So, where are the Democrats in all of this? They're no place better. Look at what happened in Wyoming. I think Wyoming is the kind of almost the Colorado of the Democratic National of the Republic of the excuse me is the Colorado of the Democrats primary. I get that out. Whew. And why? Because that's a state that Bernie won. He won. And yet Hillary walks away with more delegates. Yes. Yes, I get it. The news story is going to be, well, Bernie, you knew the rules going into it. Tusk, tusk, tusk. But does that really pass the smell test? I mean, are you going to end up with a bunch of Democratic primary voters that have been completely sidelined? So in all of this, I teased about what would happen in a third-party run scenario. The only third-party run in my lifetime, and maybe in yours too, would be Ross Perot in 92. I have ill will for Ross Perot because he's the guy that cost Bush the election. Well, Bush cost the, you know, that was, it was a formidably terrible campaign. It made Mitt Romney's run last go around look like Obama, okay, compared to what Bush was doing. This was Bush. You remember George H.W. Bush running for re-election? Completely out of touch. I think at one point in a debate, he looks at his watch. And the economy was sour, and he's running up against Slick Willie. And Bill was good. I mean, this is not the kind of Bill that's following Hillary looking like the Grim Reaper. I mean, this was vibrant 40-something-year-old Bill Clinton, and he had a little bounce in his step, and we won't get into details here. It's a family program. So, what was it? What was it? That race, Bush still could have won because there were a lot of people back then who didn't necessarily like Clinton. But what happened is when Ross Perot put himself in that race, he split the Bush vote. He took conservative voters away from Bush, and he only walked away with a little sliver of the vote, right? But it was just enough to tip the election to Bill. And Clinton won that election, I don't believe, with a majority of the vote. He just got a plurality of votes. So what does this whole scenario look like? I absolutely believe, and take this for what you will, because I've been right about a lot of stuff on Trump going back to August. Unlike this clown over here, Mr. House, who seems to think that Trump would get bored and be out of the race within a couple months, I knew that there's something lasting and there's something significantly appealing about Trump's candidacy. And it's precisely to these voters that are feeling sidelined in the political process. The other thing that and this is important, and I've said it consistently, Trump is attracting Democratic voters. He's attracting Democrats. And you saw it early on. You remember that viral video that went around, the gal that is coming out of a Trump rally? She's African-American, and she is all in for Trump. In fact, she says, you know, my husband, he's a Hillary supporter. And you know what? If he doesn't get on the Trump train, I'm going to divorce him. I mean, and she's a lifelong Democrat, voted for Obama twice, and was on board with Trump. Now, I get it. It's anecdotal. It's just one person. But those are people that you don't necessarily know. You don't see those people. They're not maybe in your circle of friends, but they're out there. And where you are going to dinner parties and you're mixing and mingling with all your hoity-toity friends and you think, well, Trump, who would ever? I mean, guffaw. You're missing, there's a segment of people out there who have a very legitimate, strong feelings for this guy. And those are people that aren't just going to go away. If the Republican convention, if Trump goes into the convention with 1,100 votes and then loses the nomination to some runner-up who came in with 700 votes, just to give you an idea. And so where are we right now? Well, we're the delegate math is, even with all the shenanigans in Colorado, Cruz is only at 527 delegates. And Trump is at 757. So there's 790, almost 800 delegates left. And that includes, of course, some of these unbound delegates. But the point is Trump can show up to the convention. He may not, he's not probably going to secure the 1237 needed, but he's going to get a lot. And he's probably at this rate going to come in with a plurality of the delegates, if not the majority. And that is why there, well, just this week, exactly, just this week, a Republican operative, one of the guys that is running, you know, the many bureaucrats that are running the national convention, said, look, Trump, if he walks in with, and it was big news, I think this was on Wednesday, this broke, it was big news, if Trump shows up at the convention with 1,100 delegates, he's got this thing sewn up. And people are, well, how can that be? I mean, it's 1237. And if you don't get 1237 in the first vote, all bets are off. And his simple point is, you can only cheat. You can only cheat. And by that, really, I mean to say that it's, you know, that it's use these rules and use these machinations to get your way if it's close. Because you cannot have a plurality of support. Forget delegates now. Forget delegates, because there have been states where Trump won and Cruz has come in and taken all his delegates using these very fair rules. And they're only fair because, well, everybody knew about these rules. But it doesn't pass the smell test. It doesn't sound good to people. It offends our notions of fair play. And so that's where a third party run that takes both Democratic supporters and Republican supporters and puts them in a third party. This has got to be on the minds of the Republican National Committee, and precisely why I'm telling you that Rance Priebus is Marie Antoinette of this political cycle. Because if he is tweeting to people, get over it, it's the equivalent of Bill Clinton telling Juanita Broderick to put some ice on it. Okay? It's that tone deaf. And it's not gonna play, and these voters are just not all gonna go poof, gone. We're not talking about Ron Paul here with 10% of the vote. 5% of the vote. It's a much bigger number. And those voters are going to go somewhere. They're going to go somewhere. And they may go to a third party. And I guarantee you that there is a movement afoot right now within the Trump support side of this selection that is thinking about a third party run. And it is actually conceivable, if you look at the breakdown on Hillary, Bernie, Cruz, and Trump, that Trump walk away in a third party deal with a plurality of the vote. And you heard it here first. There's a viable path to the presidency on a third party run. All right, that's it. We're out of time. Twitter, Sam Nation Show. And please, for everything, for all your Sam Nation needs and podcasts and everything, visit us on www.samnation.com. And we'll be back here next week, 3:00, Saturdays. We love you guys. See you soon. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KABC.